sang out a song of the soul.
And we'll sing this song. Why don't you sing along? And we can sing.
Music has an incredible ability to proclaim the soul's language beyond what mere words can speak. That is what we seek as we invite our guests to share their song of the soul. Be it joy and laughter, sorrow and tears, awe and insight, or deepest devotion, as we visit and listen, we are all part of a spiritual voyage called Song of the Soul. We're back today with part two of our Song of the Soul visit with Ariel Silver. If you missed part one last week, it can easily be found on northernspiritradio.org, a visit steeped in song and story in Ariel's silky, soaring voice. We finished just as she was explaining some of the riches and wanderings that were gifts of her Jewish upbringing, including her deep dive into Eastern and earth-based inspirations. We'll continue today exploring some of the fruits of her two more recent albums as we magically continue our visit with Ariel Silver near L.A., California, via the gift of Zoom.
You know, that was that. And also, I think that there are a couple of rituals that I especially gravitated toward because they connected me more with nature or with the cosmos. For example, in the Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, high holy days time of the year, we would take pieces of bread that were supposed to symbolize the sins of the year and threw them into the water. So we would go down to the water's edge and we were looking for a moving body of water, and we would discard this bread that, of course, the ducks and the geese would eat. But there was something about like walking outside of the synagogue and going to, you know, the water's edge, going to these places. I went to a Jewish sleepaway camp when I was young, and on Saturday night at the end of the Sabbath, there was always another kind of ritual that we would do to mark the end of it. And we would stand outside and we would light this braided candle and we'd pass around this incense and sing songs together. And it was nighttime, the stars were up, and you know, there was just that connection with the nighttime and the daytime and the water and the trees and, you know, all this stuff that I think brought me into this connection with nature that I think I was already attuned to as well. But it took, I don't know, I think that was beautiful, that it took us out of the walls of a human built building into earth spaces.
Where you find a significant spiritual connection too. Did you have that from your childhood on, that earth-centered connection?
When I was a little girl, we moved into a house in Tallahassee, Florida, that I saw being built. So I remember the smell of the sawdust and walking up the stairs before it had the back of the stairs before the backs were on, when it was just the platform. I was so afraid I was going to be sucked into those spaces and disappeared, you know. There's something like something, I don't know, fearful about that for a small child. But I saw this house being built, but the house was in the woods, or at least it had woods backing up to it. And my dad would care for some of the trees if they had, you know, some kind of illness on the tree. And then when we lived in New Jersey, we lived about 30 miles off the Appalachian Trail, where it crosses the upper part of New Jersey into upstate New York. And we lived in the woods. And I think that those settings, those were very formatively important times for me. I spent a lot of time alone and I spent a lot of time in the woods.
I understand. Let me see. You're born basically in Florida. You eventually moved up to like Boston area or something, and then you migrated, as you said, 20 years ago over to the West Coast. Why?
I was born in Florida. I was raised in New Jersey, lived a little bit in New York as a child, and then moved back, finished high school in Florida, went up to Boston for college, mostly lived in Boston for about 13 years, but two of those years in the middle, I lived in a whole bunch of other states, and then eventually got over to California. The reason for the moving, growing up, the moving was really my folks were young when I was born. They were establishing their careers. I think they were also trying to figure out how to have a relationship. And although there are no locational cures for a marriage, I think they were attempting it for some parts of it. And eventually they split up. But meanwhile, we lived in a lot of different places. And then the reason for the moving a lot when I was in my late teens and as a young adult was really just because, I mean, largely because that was what I was used to. That was normal because we had moved around so much when I was a kid. I don't think I even knew how to stay put. I hadn't lived as a child in any one place long enough to learn about relationships over time. I only knew about relationships in the meeting or the early introductions. And there are a lot of logistics that you have to handle when you move. You have to put in your address, change and start up your utilities, find a place to live, figure out where the grocery store is, find your doctors and register your car. And a lot of my 20s were caught up in those kinds of dramas and logistics. And I've been thinking a lot about those that time. And I think that, that level of busyness keeps you feeling a level of productivity and never really sinking into the boredom and having to grapple with the boredom of being in a place. What happens then when you're bored, when you're just sitting there? I think that what happens is that, the same thing that happens when you're literally bored and just staring off into space, the details start to emerge of something, subtleties. When you're in motion, you're moving fast, you're kind of getting the broad strokes of a place, but you're not really picking up on nuances. And same with relationships of any kind, whether it's place or people. When you sit in a relationship, as you've been with your wife for a long time. When you're in a relationship for a long time, just like a marinade when you're cooking, like more flavors emerge. There's a richness that emerges or can emerge. I didn't know that when I was younger, so I moved around a lot. I saw a lot of places, met a lot of people, and experienced a lot of different cultures. And I think that in that way, that was a very rich experience. But I ended up in California because I was burned out on music. I had been a touring musician. I had recorded three songs. I was living the dream. I was a singer-songwriter on the road. And there are a lot of logistics around that. And you're never grounded and you never really get to know the richness of a place. You move off fast. The next day, you're gone. You play a show. The next day, go on to the next place. And I was on the road at the end of this period of time of my life. I was on the road for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
I had a bass player and a drummer, and we were living out of our van that was run on recycled vegetable oil. And we crossed the country a few times. And it was, in many ways, the realization of a longtime dream of mine. And, all of my heroes were traveling troubadours. And I got to live that life, and I hated it. It felt like a nightmare to me. It was adventurous in the beginning, and then I realized over time that I just felt extremely ungrounded. And I had not realized, because of my previous life of moving around so much and all of the short-term relationships that I'd had with people and places, I didn't realize how much my soul really yearned to ground down and to settle somewhere. And at the time, I was married to the drummer in my band. He was the drummer on my second and third albums. And I said, I'm burned out. I can't do this anymore. And so we turned the van to Virginia and dropped the bass player off there. And then it was just around Thanksgiving time. So on our way before the holiday, we talked about where would we go. And I said, I'm done. I don't know how long I'm going to be burned out, but for the moment, I need to just kind of stop performing. And I said, so you're a drummer. You need work. Where do you want to go? And he said, let's go to a music town. Let's go to New York City. It's in the relatively same region as Boston, where I had been living for many years and where we had originally met. And so he said, let's go to New York. And I was like, great. New York is great. I will, recover from this burnout at some point in time, and I'll be close to the venues and the folks who would come out to my shows. That sounds great. And then he thought about it a little bit. He's like, actually, we have friends who are buying houses in Nashville. The cost of living is a lot lower. It's a bit of a quieter pace, well, a lot bit of a quieter pace than New York City. Let's move to Nashville. And, Nashville is like kind of the center of the songwriting world. And I thought, wow, there's so many great songwriters there. That would be great. I'd love to move to Nashville. Sure, whatever. I'm burned out. I'm not going to be writing songs right now, but when I emerge from this state, I will wake up and I'll be in, Nashville. And then we went down to Florida to visit my dad for Thanksgiving. And while we were down there, end of November, of course, and my ex-husband, the drummer, said to me, Los Angeles, I think we should move to Los Angeles. And I said, fine. And so after the holiday, we pointed the van west. All of our belongings were in our tour van. We didn't have much. And we had a futon bed and we had our instruments and clothes and a handful of books. And pointed the van west and arrived in Los Angeles 20 years ago on December 1st. And that's where I've been ever since. We split up not too long afterwards. He moved back east. He's still playing drums as far as I hear. We're not really in touch. But I fell in love with Los Angeles and eventually met the love of my life, who is a bass player.
Is that an upgrade?
I mean, you know, I don't want to be mean to anybody, but we'll just leave it at that. That's how I got here.
Well, as I said, I'm going to try and keep us moving along. The podcast version of this program will be significantly longer than the broadcast version. So if you're listening to the broadcast version, just remember there's endless riches more on the podcast version, which you can get at nordenspiritradio.org and connect up with Ariel Silver in a deeper way. What's your next song?
I think we should do River Dock at Sunset. That feels right. That's a song I was thinking about, the town that I lived in only for one grade, 12th grade. We moved back to Florida. And so this was inspired by a river dock that extends out into the St. Lucie River in Florida. And a few years ago, I found myself thinking about that river dock and my classmates who may still live in that town, who may have raised their children in that town, who maybe are beginning to raise grandchildren in that town, and how they would very likely go down to this river dock and take pictures of their children all gussied up for the prom the way that we were that year. We went down to the river dock for photographs. And I thought, oh, this river dock has seen all these generations, the ones who are being born, the ones who are no longer here. The river dock is still down there. And so this is a song about time's passage and the river dock at sunset. It's from Watershed.
On the river dock at sunset, beneath the crayon box of sky, last moments being supervised. Cameras pinned us down like butterflies. We clipped flowers onto dresses, coupled off against the chill. Cusp of honeysuckle, summer evening, and every word we spoke full of meaning. On the river dock at sunset, ones who taught us how to stand, reminiscing over rubber-soled shoes, wondering how we got to heels and hairdos. And constellations turn above the river that keeps flowing by. Time on earth keeps slipping by. There's a difference between keeping something safe and helping it to grow. Sunset through the lens of passing years, half between leaving and lingering, we try to learn how to love without worrying. And constellations turn above the river that keeps flowing by. Time on earth keeps slipping by. There's a difference between keeping something safe and helping it to grow. On the river dock at sunset, along the worn and weathered board, nothing's meant to stay, but still, letting go is the hardest drill. And constellations turn above the river that keeps flowing by. Time on earth keeps slipping by. There's a difference between keeping something safe and helping it to grow. Like the waves of the watershed, river dock at sunset. The river dock at sunset.
Folks, if you listen deeply to the lyrics of that song by R.L. Silver, you'll find so many important helps in growing up and moving towards wisdom. Two of my favorites are, there's a difference between keeping something safe and helping it to grow. If you don't understand that, there's more lessons to be learned. And the other one, we try to learn how to love without worrying. To make that transition is one more step into the closer beauty and fullness that our lives can be. And it's all in River Dock at Sunset from R.L. Silver's album, Watershed. How mature were you when you you're writing this in, I think, the 2020s, right? So you've had a number of decades of your life gone by. You mean at the age 30, you didn't already know that how to love without worrying? I bet you didn't.
No, I think that was something that I had to learn when my stepdaughters were growing up, especially when they were in their teenage years. And they were, you know, those are the years that, you know, you hope. And, you know, I was just one of four parents that were raising them, you know, and I was the stepmom. So that's got its own unique pathway. But I think that there are many ways to be a parent. And I think that what happens in the teenage years, and maybe this happens, you know, forever after that, but you kind of have to trust that you've given them a good foundation in the single digits when they were open before they become so armored as they have to be, I suppose, in order to develop a sense of self and identity. The teenage years are in their own way, just such a tender period of life, but they are so hardened on the outside in many ways. And I think that that line, we try to learn how to love without worrying, you know, you kind of have to say, okay, I'm here. If they want me to be here, I'm here for them. But at this point, I've got to let them go out into the world.
So again, folks, of the five albums that R.E.L. Silver has released already, and we're talking about music that you've released in your reincarnation after your 10 years fallow time when you weren't doing the music. I assume you were still playing it, though.
Yeah, in those 10 years, I actually played in a couple of world music bands, kirtan music, which is coming from the yoga traditions from India. Really, the words are most often Sanskrit. And I think that part of my draw toward kirtan had to do with my upbringing in synagogue, with the prayers being in another ancient language. I think that I felt really comfortable. I felt uncomfortable being back in temple, but I felt very comfortable singing in a different language and singing, you know, just like getting into chant and call and response. And from a musical standpoint, the kirtan music can be any musical genre. Some of it is very traditional Indian raga, but, you know, it could be blue-eyed soul. It could be hip hop. It's like, there's a lot of different musical influences on how kirtan presents itself, the U.S. And it's often at yoga studios or yoga and music festivals. And so I played in a couple of kirtan bands. I sang, I played guitar, I played clarinet, and I played harmonium. So I had the opportunity to still be inside the music as part of a band and still be, you know, leading an audience, so to speak, in music, and still to get out to festivals and be part of soundcheck and load in and load out and, you know, those kinds of things. So that was happening. And then I was writing a little bit of music for film and TV as well. And then I think that, you know, and then sometimes I would write songs. Every once in a while, I would take my guitar down from the wall. But mostly it didn't feel good. And mostly I was only doing it because I had a belief that I think is true, that if I didn't take my guitar down off the wall and sing a song that I had written, I would eventually forget how to do any of that. And about 10 years after I hung the guitar up on the wall and really like stepped away from being a singer-songwriter and stepped away from performing, about 10 years after that, I desperately took the guitar off the wall and I had a moment where I was like, I barely remember how to do any of this anymore. I don't remember how to really write a song. I don't really remember how to sing in this way. I don't really remember how to play. My strings are rusty. My voice is rusty. I was feeling like I was almost going to lose my grip on the whole thing. And I was just going to fall away from it and never be able to come back. And it was in that moment, this is a good segue, I think, to the song Someone Else's Dream, because it was in that moment that I was trying to figure out a relationship with someone that had never worked very well. And I decided that, or I realized that I had tried everything I could to figure out this relationship. But the one thing I had not ever tried was to write a song about it. And I thought, okay, strings are rusty, voice is rusty, you don't remember how to do this, but maybe just from like a therapy standpoint, you should like take the guitar down and see what happens if you try to write a song. And that song became Someone Else's Dream. And I was relearning for myself how to do it as I was writing that song. And in the song, the lyrics, I'm talking about someone else. I'm singing about someone else. But as it turns out, after I finished writing the song, like the next day, I picked up the song to play it again, or 3 days later, or whatever it was. And I looked at the lyrics and I was singing it, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is as much about you as it is about the other person. So when it hit me, it was like, you know, it was like truth, you know, looking truth in the face. And then that song became really important. That was the first song that I wrote before reaching out to that songwriting group and saying, okay, I really loved writing that song. I really loved it. Like, it reminded me of how much I loved writing songs. And I was like, I need accountability. I need community. I can't do this alone. I need people around me in order to do this. And I really love doing this. So I'll drive 2.5 hours on Monday evening down to San Pedro to meet with this group of people so that I can get back into it.
Was there really someone who had an archaeologist aspiration, or is that just metaphorical or just typically? I thought it might be you're digging deep within you for what was back there, back in those times, way back then. So I thought it might be a metaphorical excavation, or it might have actually been someone who was connected with that.
Yeah, it's both. It was the person did want to be an archaeologist, and also it worked as metaphor.
You'll hear that all and much more in Someone Else's Dream from the album A Thousand Tiny Torches by the gifted and wonderful Ariel Solver.
If you were the woman that you wanted to be, you'll be knee deep in dirt, combing layers of earth. You'll be digging down through the centuries, making stories out of broken pottery. But you settled down and married young. Now you're looking in the mirror at the woman you'll become. Else's dream. If you were the woman that you wanted to be, you'll be skidding out the lane before the screen door hits the frame. You'll be steering straight to lands you never knew. Buried temples and gods shaking off your facade. But what kind of woman breaks a decent home? someone's heart. What can you say when you are caught between who you are and who you thought you'd be? Back in someone else's.
Perhaps if you dig into your lives, folks, you'll find the dream that is yours that has never emerged that Ariel Silver speaks about in Someone Else's Dream and brings it forth with such great music. I want to mention, Ariel, again, you having played all the instruments you did, the various woodwinds and other instruments that you played before guitar, being in those orchestra and other musical groups, symphonies, you have a wide grasp of music, and it comes out various aspects of the songs that are here. Of course, that also depends on who you're playing with. But I was thinking, I think you were probably coming of age with music in the 1980s or something. Were you ever a punk rock devotee?
Yeah, the 80s, 90s. So when I was, I mean, I talked about the music that my dad introduced me to. Like I said, I didn't know who the artists were. I didn't actually know that those were popular songs, that other people knew them. I was very shocked when I went to summer camp and we were sitting around a campfire and someone started singing Bye Bye Miss American Pie, because, and everybody started singing along. I was like, how do you guys know this song? Like, I only knew that song, Leaving on a Jet Plane. I only knew those songs through my dad. I did not know that.
But you had a stereo.
Yeah, we did. But it wasn't, they weren't songs that I didn't have an older sibling who introduced me to music. And I didn't sit around and listen to music with my friends and like that, not that kind of music. So I was, you know, I was in bands and orchestra and theater and musical theater. And, you know, so there was all of that stuff. And then I also had the older kids in high school introduce me. Well, actually some of my peers and then some of the older kids, you know, The Cure, Bauhaus, Jane's Addiction was a great favorite of mine for many, many years. Yeah, so I listened to punk rock. I was never a punk rocker. I was a little bit of a cross between punk rock girl, hippie flower child, and then like Hebrew school clarinet playing book lover nerd.
Like, what a great like, mix.
You know, that was sort of like the stew that I was in. And, you know... You have like the melodic minor of the Jewish prayers, and you have like the cowboy chords of the 60s folk renaissance, and then you have the distortion of the punk rock, and yeah, all that stuff came together.
Well, I think we've got time. We're going to share one more song. I hesitate to stop here. I'd really like to go on much longer and share much more of your music, but people can find it by going to arielsilver.com. Spelling again, if that's an issue, I think you know how to spell northernspiritradio.org. And by the way, we're org because we're organic, not commercial. But the .com will get you there too. So anyway, what should we share last of all?
Well, the last song that I'd love to share today is the last song on the album Watershed. It's called Bottle Up Tonight. I wrote all the songs in Watershed during the quarantine, the COVID pandemic quarantine period. And one of the things about that time period that was really beautiful, with full acknowledgement of the many, many people who got sick, the many people that died, like all of the ways that it has shaped our contemporary culture. I can never forget all of that stuff. But there was also a lot of beauty that I really wanted to hold on to, and I tried to put into the songs on this album. And one of the things that I loved about that time was, at least in my household, everything felt very present. We weren't in a rush to go anywhere. There was nowhere to go. And my husband and I would go on walks. We would go on bike rides every night and see all the closed storefronts, all the closed restaurants, no traffic on the road. And this was really at the beginning more than you know, the quarantine here lasted a really long time, and this is more true to the first 6 weeks or first 3 months or so, but everything was very, you know, right here, right now. And we didn't know how it was going to play out. And this was something that I thought about a lot while I was writing the songs of Watershed, was that, especially in the beginning of the pandemic, we didn't know what it was going to become and how it was going to play out, or if any of us were going to survive it. And I found myself thinking a lot of times, well, either I'm going to die in this pandemic, or I'm going to come to the end of it and I'm going to be alive. And I just have to work from the assumption that I'm going to be alive, because I can't live every day as if I'm about to die. And so if I'm going to be alive when we get through this phase or this period of time, whatever it is, however long it is till then, how do I want to be different? How do I want to have grown? What do I want to take with me so that a year, 2 years, 5 years, however it takes, you know, once we're in the future, you know, what have I done with this time? And the song Bottle Up Tonight was really about just bottling up this moment in time and appreciating the sights, the sounds of this singular moment. So the beginning of the song starts almost like a, I even say it later in the song, like, might we make an apothecary potion? The beginning of the song is really like a recipe. It's like one part this, one part that, one part this, one part that, and let's mix it all together and like, let's bottle that up and hold on to it, because we don't know what the future's going to bring and we can't control what the past was. And let's just be right here and bottle up tonight.
You know, that phrase, bottle up, it may have a different meaning in California than here in the Midwest. But usually when I say bottle up, I'm referring to someone bottling up their feelings and not letting them out, as opposed to creating this potion you're speaking of.
I guess it could go either way, right? You could bottle up the bad, or you could bottle up the good. You get to choose what goes in that bottle.
Yeah, but you do have Napa Valley closer to you and other things. I don't know how many winemakers there are in Wisconsin. There are some, for sure. We do have grapes and all. But I just had a feeling that maybe, again, because I'm in the Midwest, I had a little bit different language that I was using than on the coast.
I think it is because I live in, you know, California has so much wine country. And, you know, I think that, you know, I have, especially before the venues reopened, the wineries reopened for outdoor gathering. And many of the wineries have live music. And so I started performing at wineries. And I found myself thinking about how wine comes from the fruit of the vine. And that fruit grew in a season in a particular year. And whatever the weather was and whatever the qualities of the soil were at that particular time is what goes into the fruit. And the fruit gets crushed and bottled up. And when you're drinking a glass of wine, or for you, when you're bottling your maple syrup, you know, it's like you're actually bottling up a moment in time. Whatever the elements were that went into those grapes and that harvest get bottled. And, you know, I don't think about that every time I drink a glass of wine, but I love that idea of, you know, this carrot or that glass of wine, whatever it is that we're eating or drinking, is really coming from, you know, a particular season's harvest, a moment.
Well, folks, I hope that this last song that's being shared by Arielle Silver whets your thirst for laying up the vintage of portions of your life so you can taste it later, come back and savor it with all of the, I think, increased experience. So many things you can taste with increased wisdom, but you have to have them saved in order to be able to do that. So with Arielle's songs, Bottle Up Tonight, I hope you end up getting another gift of growth from it, more richness to your life from that. Arielle, I think we're going to go out with this song as the last one to share today. I do hope people will be heading to ArielleSilver.com, linked on NordenspiritRadio.org, and explore all of your music, and that they eagerly sign up to be connected to you so that they can get your sixth album, which will be coming out sometime over the next year. Thank you so much for sharing so deeply, writing so deeply. I can't help but be sad that there were 10 years when you weren't able to be doing music, but I am very grateful that you took the necessary rest so you could come back with such power and depth as you have. Thanks so much, Arielle.
Mark, thank you Thank you so much for having me. This has been such a nice conversation. I also want to thank you for reaching out to me and inviting me to be a part of it. At the moment that you did, the songs that we've been talking about today are, if you had reached out to me 2 years ago, these are probably not the songs I would have shared. These are like, you know, I think that they have, I don't know. I don't know exactly what the quality is of these songs compared with the other ones, but there's some, a lot of them are like quieter, I think. And so thank you for talking about them.
Thank you so much, Ariel. Again, arielsilver.com. This song is Bottle Up Tonight. We'll see you next week for Song of the Soul.
One part alabaster moon, one part rustling old raccoon, one part whispers of a breeze, one part heady jasmine bloom, one part lonely nightbird tune, one part two heartbeats. Might we make an apothecary potion or bottle it like Napa wine? Might we capture all we left unspoken? Cork it up for future delight. Whatever time might hold, whatever fate unfolds, forget all that we can't control. But let's bottle up tonight. Spotlight of a street lamp beam, shadows dancing in between, familiar as an old refrain. All the stories of the past, the future ones that come too fast, off the edges of the frame. Might we make an apothecary potion or bottle it like Napa wine? Might we capture all we left unspoken? Cork it up for future delight. Whatever time might hold, whatever fate unfolds, forget all that we can't control. But let's bottle up tonight. Whatever time might hold, whatever fate unfolds, forget all that we can't control. But let's bottle up tonight.
You have every right to be surprised that I'm still here, given that as I was introducing that song, Bottle Up Tonight by Ariel Silver, I told you that I'd be seeing you next week. The thing is that we have some more room to fill up for part two of this Song of the Soul.
I'm wondering, Ariel, if we can squeeze in maybe another song to share this, because what I really want to do is share your Song of the Soul over 2 weeks. Is there another song that you would be willing to share with our listeners today for Song of the Soul?
Mark, it has been an honor to talk with you. I feel very grateful and honored that you want to, that you'd like to extend this over 2 weeks. So thank you for that. I feel deeply connected to the stories behind every song on both Watershed, the newest album, and A Thousand Tiny Torches, the one that came before that. I could share stories about all of the songs, but let's go with Ghost Ships, which is on Watershed.
That'll be great from my point of view. When I first listened to this song, my immediate reaction was, oh, I lived that in my life. I had that experience. And I'm wondering if this is firsthand experience for you or just watching other people with their ghost ships and giving up on that trip, that voyage.
Well, the title of the song comes from an essay by the writer Cheryl Strayed from her collection called Dear Sugar, Tiny Beautiful Things, or Tiny Beautiful Things, Dear Sugar. She is a wonderful essayist, also novelist and memoirist. A lot of people know her first and foremost through her memoir that came out maybe 10 or so years ago called Wild, about her long walk on the Pacific Crest Trail. And it was a memoir of her time navigating through grief and journeying physically, but also psychologically, emotionally, spiritually over the course of that walk. Later, fast forward, she's a wonderful writer. I know I've already said that. Am I gushing too much over Cheryl Strayed?
She
inherited an advice column, and the advice column was called Dear Sugar. So she became kind of like from The Princess Bride, the Dread Pirate Roberts, like, you know, like she inherited the Dear Sugar title. So she became Dear Sugar, but she was underground. Nobody knew who Dear Sugar was behind the scenes, but a lot of people were speculating that it was in fact Cheryl Strayed, because her writing is, like I said, so remarkable. And she's so empathetic, deeply insightful. She answers in that column, that advice column, she answers people's request for advice by identifying the underlying question beneath what they're really asking. You know, the kind of the bigger value-based or existential worry or whatever it is. Years later, she finally came out of the closet as Dear Sugar and published a book of some of her most popular essays. And in that collection is one called The Ghost Ships That Carry Us. And I was working on this song, Ghost Ships. I was pretty far in the song, but I felt like there was something that I was looking for to kind of, you know, click it into place somehow. And the underlying idea, the underlying philosophy of that song reminded me of this essay of hers, Ghost Ships, which is, you know, as you know, it's a song that's looking back. For me, the story of my own life behind the song was, you know, going back in time to my first love and how we had imagined a life together. But of course, the relationship ended. And I have lived many, many years since then and love my life and love my sweetheart. But I found myself thinking back to my younger self and remembering how my younger self had envisioned a future self that was not the future that I am living now. And in Cheryl Strayed's essay, she talks about how those other versions of ourselves that we never actually live, perhaps they're out there somewhere floating on ghost ships, still afloat on another plane. And I love that idea, not just about, you know, I don't wish that I had lived that future life of my past love, because my sweetheart now, you know, I love my life now. I don't wish it away in any way. But it just made me think about all the other versions of myself, all the other adventures. You get to a place in your life, I think, you know, earlier in your life, you might think, oh, I have all the full buffet. I can choose from anything. I can eat it all, right? And then as you live life, you start to make decisions that, you know, some decisions are quite, quite difficult, because you realize that if I decide to turn to you know, down this pathway, I will never be back at this intersection. I will never be able to take that other pathway. There are just some decisions that we make in life that preclude those other variations. That is one of the great challenges, I think, that we all have. You know, some people suffer over that and some people embrace it. They step fully into the path that they have chosen. And so I was thinking back to, you know, the song Ghost Ships. The beginning of it is we talked forever about a blue house in a magazine. You know, this was me in my early 20s making plans to have a home with someone. Fast forward to my present day and I have a home with someone else. And
it's not blue?
It's not the blue house that I had once imagined, right? It's a different person. It's a different life.
But it's got the piano, doesn't it?
It has keyboards. My sweetheart is, my husband is a composer and he is a keyboardist. We don't actually have an acoustic piano. You made me flash though to the stop motion animated music video that I made with a filmmaker for this song, the official music video, which is absolutely beautiful. I love it. And the piano that is featured in that video is a piano at someone's home in Arizona. I was playing a house concert at her house and she had the perfect piano for the music video. And so I asked her if I could take some photographs of it. But that is my cat that jumped up on the piano bench, if you see the video.
And I'll make sure for our listeners, I will include the link for the video on northernspiritradio.org. with this interview. So they will be able to see your cat.
Thank you so much. But yeah, there's something really wonderful and empowering and bittersweet and nostalgic. You know, all those things about thinking of the future self that our past self imagined. So that's Ghost Ships.
I think many people fear bittersweet. They focus on the bitter part of it without the sweet. And I've got loads of those such memories. And the thing, you know, that I hold on to is I'm grateful who I am today, the life I've lived. I wouldn't want to redo it. I don't want to take a different path. It's not possible, but I don't want to because I am so grateful. I sense that gratitude in you.
Oh, for sure. But you know what's interesting about this idea of bittersweetness is that right now I am sitting in a different location than our part one interview. And where I am today is in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm at the Peabody Conservatory, which is affiliated with Johns Hopkins University. And I'm here for the week, an intensive on the power of music in healthcare. And we have been visiting the Johns Hopkins Hospital, and we've been here at the Peabody Conservatory, and we have been deeply immersed in questions of scope and appropriateness, empathy, human connection, all kinds of things, and musicality as it would be presented in a healthcare setting. And one of the things we're talking about today is bittersweet music. Often the music that makes us feel that's most cathartic. We feel a sense of being seen by the songwriter, by the artist, by the performer when we hear a bittersweet song because it touches something in us.
The way I think of it, and again, my first album that I ever bought was Simon and Garfunkel's Sound of Silence album, I Am a Rock's on there. If I never loved, I never would have cried. I got the full range of my experience and emotions because I have the bitter and the sweet, and it's okay.
And also, I mean, crying is an indicator of the emotional nervous system feeling a sense of overwhelm. And isn't it beautiful to be so touched, not to be so overwhelmed that you can't cope, but to be so touched that you cry? Right? That means that something was deeply meaningful. And what are we here on earth to do anyway, right?
And one more thing I'd mention, folks, before we actually listen to Ghost Ships is, as with each song that you've heard from Ariel Silver, you've, I'm sure, felt the strength of the music within her. This song in particular, I found the soaring notes felt to me like it lives into the pain and the release, the bitter and the sweetness, because of her voice so perfectly capturing and floating into it. So I hope this song touches you as much as it does me. It definitely lands right in my heart. Reminds me of so many things from my past, and it reminds me of humanity's potential, both for happiness and for healing. So I really thank you for this song. Let's listen to Ghost Ships.
We talked forever
bought a blue house in a magazine, the orange flames of maple trees in fall. We'd fix the cellar, piano in the living room, a bookcase and curtains in the hall. I made a scrapbook in my mind, a future time. Digging out from snow, the last nor'easter froze us to the core. Or maybe youth, we hadn't lived enough to see the way that love can leave you wanting more. By summer we were through, house of blue.
Figure you Song of the Soul listeners realize how lucky you are that you got a bonus track today from Arielle Sulfur, her song Ghost Ships from her latest album. We've got the link to her website on northernspiritradio.org, and we've got the video that goes with that song as well. Arielle, again, thank you for lifting up my heart and moving it so deeply, and I'm sure I'm thanking you also on behalf of all of our listeners.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
So, thanks to Andrew Jansen for production assistance in completing part two of Arielle Sulfur's Rich Sharing, and we'll see you next week for Song of the Soul. The theme music for Song of the Soul is by Chris Williamson, and it is called Song of the Soul. Check out all things Song of the Soul on northernspiritradio.org, guests, links, stations, and a place for your feedback, suggestions, and support. Send your Songs of the Soul to me, Mark Helpsmeet, via the info on our website, and join us weekly for Song of the Soul.